We're driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform with over 350 million global monthly visitors, according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. Leveraging over 140 million qualifications and preferences every day, Indeed's matching engine is constantly learning from your preferences. So the more you use Indeed, the better it gets. Join more than 3.5 million businesses worldwide that use Indeed to hire great talent fast. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/Blue Wire. Just go to Indeed.com/Blue Wire right now and support our show by saying that you heard about Indeed on this podcast. That's Indeed.com/Blue Wire. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.
Hello and welcome into the So Rare Andrews podcast, brought to you by RotoWire and sponsored by So Rare. I am Andrew Laird, senior soccer editor of RotoWire, joined as always by Andy Black, and today a very special guest joining us once again, Ivaldo Basso from the, you were on the Currency Bundle podcast that we did months ago, where you slashed all of our dreams that we were going to get ETH rich just by buying these soccer cards. But Ivaldo, how's it going?
Well, you know, once again, I'm going to slash your dreams because, you know, as the senior soccer editor of RotoWire, I find it totally bizarre that you have a So Rare podcast and yet you want to speak to somebody that no longer even plays on So Rare. It sounds like you're not catering to your audience. They're here to hear, they're here to listen to you guys about the game, not someone that doesn't want to play the damn thing anymore.
I think we have gotten to the point where enough people think that we are only positive about the game, which I don't think is completely fair, but we needed somebody to straighten us out a little bit. And I think you did that in the first time you came on, and obviously it wasn't strong enough because Andy and I are still here playing So Rare, but you were clearly the biggest person on that podcast because you decided to walk away. And how does it feel not playing So Rare anymore?
I'm not going to have much prophetic to say about it. I think not playing is more like about me than about So Rare. I mean, So Rare has all the elements of a game that I love. Soccer cards. We talked in the last pod. I have over 40,000 physical real soccer cards. So obviously I like that.
Wait, you said 40,000?
What?
Oh, you said 40,000.
40,000, yeah, 40,000.
My God.
I thought it was 30,000 last time. Are you buying more? Weren't you supposed to be
selling? No, I actually embarked on like a, it's not exact, but I embarked on like actually trying to count, and it's like a big estimate, but it's definitely over 30. So I'm using 40.
Are you just weighing them to count?
I should do that. you know, brilliant game, brilliantly designed. I think when I really think about it, I'm just going to blame Black. Because why not just blame him for stuff?
Yeah, there you go.
You know, I haven't even told you this. Like, you know, and you know, we used to talk almost every night for months just about the game and, you know, in the Discord and stuff. And I admired so much how much fun you were having. So, yeah. Like, my fifth grade, seventh grade, and eighth grade sons, they know Black. Because, you know, here was this guy buying cards of guys whose like name had dong in them or poop in them or guys that were posed funny. And I'd show that to my kids. And you know, they thought that was like the funniest thing ever. They thought like Black was a legend. And then But then my eighth grader would be like, Dad, that's so stupid. Do those cards even score a lot of points? And then I'm like, oh shoot, I'm raising a miserable fuck just like me. and so, you know, but it did make an impression on me how much kind of fun you were having. And, you know, once I started kind of, there was some weeks I was like missing putting in lineups, which was like unthinkable to miss that deadline, you know, between December and May when I was playing, like unthinkable. I actually enjoyed it. But that was kind of the first sign that things started, were unraveling a bit.
But it seems like, because you were one of the first people that I talked to about the game also, but it always seemed like it was more about the game than it was any collectibles for you. So did you ever get to the point where you were like, maybe I'll just collect these, or like once the game wasn't fun enough that you were kind of walking, that you're just like, if I don't want to play this game, then I guess I'm done.
Yeah, you know, my mind never crossed. I've never gotten there. The collectible element, I've never gotten there. I'm not there then. I wasn't not there now, obviously, which is weird because I have these useless, you know, physical cards. And so, and I just, that switch hasn't flipped. And by the way, as much as I poked fun at Black earlier and his style of buying some cards, no one here is kidding themselves. The guy's like one of the most uber sharp players in the game, and a super great mind on this game. And it was just, it was just that he could be super sharp and serious and like fun at the same time, which I thought was great.
I appreciate that.
Yeah, the collectible part, I don't believe in it, and I can't even tell you why.
Probably because they're so vanilla and they all look the same, right? How do you collect something when they all look the same?
You know, what's funny is, so that's a great comment. I agree with that. But then also I can say, like, if physical cards nowadays, like, they're all different and there's special cards for everybody and they all don't look the same. And I think that's annoying also.
Gotcha.
I'm just miserable and never satisfied no matter what. No, and by the way, through all this, I think Sorare is the game design, the technology, the economic, like the economy of the game, like, is uber fascinating, especially to someone like me that's like interested in like financial markets and stuff. Like not a bad word to say about it at all. And really it's more like about, you know, you have that pie chart of time. We all have like limited time, right? And you break that pie chart up in different ways. And, you know, you guys mentioned it the other day. You know, there's a team a few miles from my house, a fourth division team. I'll say fourth division. There is no fourth division in the U.S. So anyone that's not in the first three divisions just calls themselves fourth division. So there's a fourth division team that started this year a few miles from my house, and I just started helping them. I was the stadium announcer, the Twitter feed, the a little bit of play-by-play, helping guys find jobs, talking to the coach and the players about, and I'm not one of these Twitter, I'm not one of these like formation junkies or like tactics junkies, but talking to players and coaches about what you were about to do and actually see it unfold right in front of you, like your decisions, like that was really, really neat. And like something that like in some ways made fantasy sports feel like a little bit empty. Now I say that, but I still like play DraftKings. I still play EPL season long. How much of a dinosaur am I for still doing that? So like, I have no good reasons here.
Yeah. I noticed that you're definitely still playing DFS. So it's not like you've separated yourself from fantasy sports.
Right. Yeah. It's probably not a great take. I still get like charged up for like daily fantasy. Now I only play MLS now and not like every league in the world. So I've limited it quite a bit.
But so you're not playing the Turkish League or Indian Super League DFS slates? No.
Hey, there was back at COVID when like the Turkish League was the only thing going on. I mean, it was like unbelievable, the prize pools. It was like comical for those of us that have been playing a long time.
There was nothing greater than seeing somebody win like $300,000 from a A-League classic slate or something that kicked off at 3 o'clock in the morning on the East Coast. So yeah, those were the days.
Right.
Anyway, so at what point, like obviously you stopped, you know, putting lineups in, but you could have also just left your cards to sit, but instead you decided to sell them. Obviously, economically, that made sense. But was there ever a point where you were like, maybe I'll just keep them there, and if I want to pick it up again, I'll go back? Or you just wanted to...
And it's like one of the annoying things as I was playing, a thing that would annoy me about the super sharp, and I'm making generalities now, like I'm just making a generality, so I'm going to be wrong because not everyone fits the generality. But it seemed to me there was a lot of super sharp players that I thought were super sharp that had the gigantic lobbies, and they weren't selling, what I could tell, they weren't selling very many of their cards. And that was like so annoying to me. I'm like, what are these people doing? Because they don't need, and I know you need a lot of cards to play in other leagues. Trust me, I get it. I had 120 yeah. something cards and you still were like, holy crap, I can't even fill a sixth team or something. So I get it. But, you know, like, and so, you know, I didn't wake up one day and say, I'm out. I'm liquidating the whole thing. It wasn't kind of like that, but I did start selling around the margins and some good players too. Like I sold like a Carl's Guild reward that I got. And, you know, I sold them for close to a grand. And once you sell a couple and start monetizing, it becomes a little easy. Once you cross that barrier where you're not like having any emotional attachment to the damn card, it becomes a little easier to keep selling.
Well, not only that, you're breaking lineups. So it's like if Carlos Gil's not in that lineup, then the other four cards might be less valuable now and easier for you to part with.
No, that well, for sure. And I was experiencing that. Like that scenario, like when I was like 120-ish cards, like that wasn't really going on yet. Certainly that was in play when you're getting down to like 80 or so. That was actually totally in play. But like I look at a guy, like I'm just gonna use a random thing. Like and then I live in Chicago, so I'll just use Kenneth Cronholm, the like second or third string keeper on the Fire. Let's just take him for a moment.
Yep.
So like it's obvious. I mean, this guy's like 37 years old, like he's been injured for like years. Like this guy's like never playing soccer again, like ever. And like so many people have his card. And I look at that and I say, well, I mean, are those people really waiting for him to get transferred and play on another team? Because like the percentage chance of that now happening is very close to zero. And then you're like, well, you know, no one, they must not be selling it because they know no one will buy it. But, and I looked at this a few weeks ago, not in preparation for this pod, but a couple of weeks ago, and like a couple of his cards were selling for like 150, 200 bucks. Like you got to take that all day. Like are you waiting for Kenneth Cronholm to be $600 again? Like I don't get it. And people with big lobbies, I get that there's like corners of their lobby that are just quantitatively immaterial for them to spend time. But you know, these $100 here and there are going to add up over time. It adds up. And so, you know, I think it wasn't hard for me to, and I've been, you know, I've been dealing with illiquid assets for over two decades in my professional life. Now that doesn't make me smarter on them. It just makes me, I think it makes me less emotionally attached to them and makes me realize a lot of things about liquidation value that I think people are going to be surprised when they go to sell a bunch of cards or when they want to sell cards.
Right. Yeah. And I think we see some of that with like the deals going to like the big dealers like Powell and some of the other trading type accounts that are buying galleries. They're not getting 100% of their quote unquote so rare data value. They're getting a percentage of that. So they're not getting that full value that they think that it might be worth.
Yeah. Look, I think I have like two cards left. So I've sold, you know, about 120 cards in the last few months. And one thing I will say so rare data, first and foremost, if someone's listening to this pod and hasn't like gave a donation to so rare data, I don't know what the hell they're doing because the website is absolutely critical and you wouldn't even enjoy playing so rare without that sister site. So go donate to so rare data.
I don't think he's any longer accepting donations.
Oh, he doesn't?
No.
Jesus Christ.
Did you hear the news that he raised a round of funding?
I did.
Yeah. So that's
couldn't be happier for the guy.
That's why he's not taking donations anymore.
Yeah. What the hell? Hey, two revenue streams is always better than one. You know, what the, so, but like when you're when you decide to liquidate your cards, this is probably not a popular take, or maybe there's a counter argument that I don't know of.
That's what you're here for, the unpopular takes, man.
I looked at SoRare data, literally zero. Didn't even log into the thing. It doesn't matter. There's only one thing you have to look at when you want to sell a card. Go to that card on SoRare. What's the lowest price it's selling at? Guess what? The card isn't worth that price because no one's paid it. No one's paid that price for it yet. Okay. Yeah. Some dorks on the corner will tell me, oh, but I have number one of 100. Okay. There might be a few things here and there. I don't even think that's all material, but okay. I'll give it to you. But like all you got to do, if you're not listing your card for the lowest price in the whole thing, you're not going to sell it. Period.
Yep.
So that's the only data point that matters. And what SoRare data says, how the card has behaved last year, 4 months ago, 3 months ago, that doesn't actually matter. It doesn't. So like I have not logged into SoRare data for months. I haven't needed to. I would say if you
so when you idea, real quick, when you sold your gallery, you didn't utilize SoRare data at all. You just undercut the market and probably logged back in, checked, and if somebody undercut you, you undercut them back and until it sold.
Well, that's all I did.
Yeah. Wow.
I mean, if you want to get rid of a card, that's how it. If there's yep. five people selling a card for cheaper than you, no one's like buying your card.
Right.
Instead of buying the other five. They're just not. So, you know.
Did you have like a time frame though that you wanted to get out? Like obviously you could have set a price higher and say, if somebody comes along and pays this, then great. But you just want it out.
That's the part. No one's going to come along and do it. Especially if there's cards lower than you.
Right.
And so I would say if someone really wants to know what their liquidation value is of their thing, go to the lowest offered price and subtract 10 or 20%. And that is your liquidation value. The lowest end of the range of your liquidation value, period. I could have went to Powell and stuff and had it done faster. I thought I could do a little bit better on pricing than maybe if I did the bulk sale. I have no evidence either way, but I just thought that.
One of the big things that you talked about on the last time you were on is just kind of the relationship between ETH and fiat prices when it comes to these cards. Did you look at the price of ETH at all when you were selling? Like, did you care? Because
I didn't care at all. I mean, I only cared what the lowest price in the lobby was of that particular card. Now I've tracked closely. Like when I judge my success, I mean, people that are just playing for fun, that already is successful. Like you've been successful if you're having fun playing. So I don't mean to like introduce all these like, oh, well, you have to be making money in order for this to be fun. That's not true. Like my only judge of how I did fiscally is like how many dollars left my Chase bank account and how many dollars I put back in. The difference between those numbers is what my results were financially. And like I talked back when I was kind of playing the game more, like people had all kinds of crazy ways to calculate how they were doing financially in the game. For me, what leaves my Chase account and what goes back in is the ultimate measurement. Accumulating ETH, you can't do anything with it, anything real, right? You can't go to the doctor, can't eat, can't rent an apartment. So, it's just like money. So that was kind of my, that was kind of my metric. And I think roughly, and just to be transparent, not that these are anything sexy, I probably bought, I'm in the neighborhood of, kind of 125 cards kind of total that I bought. And that was like 37-ish thousand. And then I sold all those. I'm going to fall out now at about like 65,000 one selling those. That's like right around like a $25,000 profit or so. Is that good? I don't know.
Seems good.
It was like 7 months, wasn't it?
It actually proved one of my theories, I think. Like if I just, my average buy-in of ETH was like $1,100 per ETH. And my average sell of ETH was like $3,200. 32 or 33. And I had a lot of buying transactions and a lot of selling transactions because I kind of did everything kind of incrementally. Like I would have done better if I just held the ETH itself. And, you know, in the last podcast, I was of the theory and I talked about some specific cards to try to prove the theory, that owning the cards is like not even a hedge. It's just a different asset than owning ETH. You don't own ETH when you own the SoRare cards. You own a different asset
that yeah, for sure.
in its own ways based on unique factors. And ETH behaves in its own ways based on unique factors. And those factors aren't necessarily the same for SoRare cards and ETH. One thing I do want to mention, and this is just this is the part I'm fascinated about the most and why I'm going to find ways to stay close to the game. Hopefully you guys keep me in the Discord. I like in any marketplace, like a stock market, a currency market, you know, SoRare is no different than those kind of markets. In any marketplace, there are events that end up causing uncomfortable ripples or some degree of pain for participants. I don't think it's happened yet in SoRare. I think it's going to. Now, I don't know what that event is. The characteristic of these events in markets is usually that they're like hidden gremlins. Because if they weren't hidden gremlins, then people would foresee them and avoid them. So like, I think about it as like this company that I never heard of until 3 days ago, this Chinese company Evergrande, which has been in the news the last several days. And like, here's a company I've never heard of in my life. And now it has like the potential of wreaking havoc over worldwide financial markets. And so, you know, it is always kind of this gremlin. And whatever this catalyst is that caused some uncomfortable ripples, I'm going to be really curious to see what the SoRare community, all the players, how they react and what they do about it. Now, there was a ripple in SoRare already, but it was to the benefit of all the players. Now, reasonable minds may interpret what happened earlier in the year differently, when all the values like went to the moon for that like few week period. And, you know, some of us sold cards for like 5x what we bought them at, based on really nothing.
Yeah.
That ripple was SoRare making a complete mess of the supply demand balance in the game. They were asleep at the switch and didn't pump enough cards to keep up with the user demand for cards. So demand outstripped supply for that multi-week period. Those of us that were in the game then benefited hugely from that. Now, I can assure you that mistake, SoRare won't make that one again, because that mistake cost them millions and millions of dollars.
Yeah.
But there will be a ripple. There will be something that happens the other way that will make people uncomfortable. And it'll be fascinating to see how that unfolds. And I'm not saying SoRare will do anything wrong or the game makers will tweak the game and piss people off. I'm not saying it'll be something else that none of us can even think of.
Yeah. Yeah. I think that's interesting. I don't know that they can pump out more cards if the user base grows at a substantial rate like it is right now and continues to do so. I mean, when it comes to rare cards, you're still looking at only 100 of each one. And if, you know, 100 people want to buy a Ronaldo, well, tough luck. Ronaldo's not getting minted right now. And there's only so many out there.
Yeah.
So I think there will be, you know, fringe scenarios where, you know, I don't think SoRare can pump out cards faster.
Well, you know, you were actually, and this is part of my reason why you're like so sharp at this stuff. Like, you actually turned me on. You were commenting throughout kind of the course of time on like the you know, number of seconds even between right. like card sales, where they certainly can toggle that. right?
Right, but they do have a set distribution model of how many cards will be auctioned and how many cards will be rewarded.
Yeah.
And that's a set amount. So sure, they could go sell all of the Neymars, but once they're once they've sold all the Neymars that they've said that they were going to sell, they're done.
Yeah. So you, what you're saying is, I think, is like, hey, Evaldo, that imbalance, they may not have been able to toggle it because that imbalance, like, they might have not had enough even authorized authorized cards when they looked at their sheet and saw like what they needed to save kind of in reserve for future awards. Like, they actually didn't think they even had enough cards to pump them out more. That's kind of what you're saying.
Yeah.
Yeah. And I don't know that answer. I know that is certainly plausible.
I'll say, I will say that's why they wanted these yellow cards, the limited cards is yeah, they can pump those out. And
right.
So we've only seen the prices of those things go up.
Is that right?
I mean, that's what we're seeing right now.
That's shocking. I mean, this is like a, this is a, could have been close to the game for a few months. That shocks me. I mean, that shocks me.
It shocks me too.
I mean, as long as the user base grows, then it's all good. You know,
so
the user base doesn't grow.
So is that the black swan that you were talking about when the user base finally plateaus off?
No, because everyone can see, like, they're like, so Rare will see that and do something to try to counteract that or make it. And users, I mean, there's statistics that I see on Twitter that people get from So Rare data, like how many lineups are, like, that's enough, that's foreseeable enough. That
gotcha.
I don't think that that's one of these catalyst events. And by the way, one of these catalyst events, I chose my words, like, will cause an uncomfortable ripple. I'm not saying, like, So Rare is going to zero or, like, everyone's, I don't think it's, like, that dramatic, but it'll be uncomfortable.
Yeah. Yeah.
But because like every single market in the world has periods of that. And so you can't tell me that, like, So Rare is like the uber unique market, the only market in the world, the only economy in the world that will only go up. Like, I can't buy that.
Yeah.
Even though I can't explain why or why not.
Yeah, that's fair.
Get ready for the greatest roast of all time. The Roast of Tom Brady. A Netflix live event happening May 5th. Hosted by Kevin Hart. The seven-time world champion gets his cleats held to the fire by famous friends and frenemies on an unforgettable night where everything is fair game. Tune in on May 5th at 5 p.m. Pacific time for The Roast of Tom Brady. Live only on Netflix.
You ready?
Showtime.
On May 3rd, summer starts with the Fall Guy.
What are you doing later?
Let's drink a spicy margarita.
Make some bad decisions.
Yes!
Audiences are falling in love with the most entertaining film of the year.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy.
That's what the poster said.
See Ryan Gosling and Emily Blunt in the movie critics say exists to make you happy.
Trying to make it out?
Nope.
Because I don't either. It's not what I'm into right now.
What are you into?
Talking.
Yeah.
The Fall Guy. Only in theaters May 3rd. Rated PG-13.
One thing I wanted to touch on that you mentioned before is how you were buying ETH. You were buying ETH while you were buying cards. Like, you were... that was the way that you were getting more money into So Rare. Are you still buying ETH?
No. I just don't have like an interest in kind of crypto, and I'm not in any other NFT projects. If I was going to do NFTs, like, it would be So Rare, because I think the game's fantastic and great and has utility, and, you know, all the reasons you guys love it are the reasons I love it.
Do you think?
Do you guys do a bunch of crypto outside of your cards?
I used to, not really anymore. I mean, this consumes enough of my time to where I can't research other things or work on other things. Like, this is my side hustle, and
yeah.
I mean, that's all I have time for right now.
Now, Ian, both of you, but Black first, because your gallery is big. Do you shed cards periodically, like around the margins, or not really?
I have a bunch of cards for sale right now. Because there's a big, really, because there's a lot of new users joining right now. And I feel like it's a good time to list some cards for sale, because there's going to be people that you know, want some of the cards that I have. But I have not sold, like, probably the last, like, 4 weeks before this week, I haven't sold a single card. And not for really...
Not a single card?
Yeah, not for really any specific reason other than just I've been super busy. And, like, I could kind of see trends of, like, growth coming. And it was like, well, why sell now when, you know, maybe in 3 weeks we'll have a lot of new users that want these cards.
Right. Now, do you sell, like, there's two sellings. There's a person that lists their card for sale to make themselves feel good. And that they're like, well, hey, I'm in sell mode too.
Right.
And then there's people that list their cards for sale to actually sell it.
Which so is, like, I do
at the lowest price and, you know, which one?
I do two things. I do, if I want to sell a card, I will undercut the market and I'll be the lowest listed on the market by 5-10%, whatever. And if somebody comes in and undercuts me, I will undercut them right back and till I sell the card. If it's a card that I want to get rid of.
Right.
But with like super premium cards, if I notice that there's none other listed on the market, and I might be kind of giving away a secret here right now, but I'm the only one, or I was earlier today, the only one with a Joshua Kimmich card listed on the market, and it was like 5 ETH. But somebody DM'd me and they were like, hey, what's your price for him? And I was like, nope, that's the price. And it's like if somebody came in and they were like, I have to have this card right now, I'll buy him for 5 ETH, they could. And I did the same thing with Noah Lang's Super Rare. I don't want to sell that card, but if somebody wants to go on the market and pay 15 ETH for it, they're welcome to do so.
Totally agree with that strategy. I was back when I had like a Guerrerian Super Rare, I did just put it out there for like an amount that I really didn't expect anyone to pay, but you're just saying, but it was the only one out there. So if someone wanted that one card, like that was the price. So I think what you're doing is totally awesome and sound. Andrew, do you sell cards?
I just counted. I've sold 18 cards in the last week.
Wow. Like, sounds like we should be interviewing you guys on the pod. Why you're exiting so rare.
No. So I pretty much sell because I win such low rewards, but I do win cards, but I pretty much will post any card that I win because I'm at the point where the only cards I want to acquire are ones that make my lineups better. And if I win a card that does not make my lineup better, then I pretty much immediately try to sell it. And I always post it at the lowest.
I think that's like super smart and super sound. I like love it.
So these new limited cards, there's a weird thing going on that I don't think any of us can really explain, but because the limited cards was the key to bring in people who wanted to play for a lower budget. The limited card market, and obviously there are more cards, is like significantly more liquid than rare cards and super rares. Like obviously there are more of them, but the secondary market is also extremely liquid. And so the odd thing about it is that like I sold a card the other day for like $5, which, you know, a month ago, I don't even think you could list a card at $5, but like there's so many of these limited cards. And like, if I'm not going to use this card, the $5 is worth more for me than holding this card.
Correct.
And so that's what I do. I just post pretty much any card that I win at this point until I can finally win a good card.
I think that's smart. So like I had like a little bit of a theory, and it sounds like this is not happening. One thing I was afraid of is that, you know, the yellow cards were limited, were like a gateway for getting people into the game. I saw a potential path of people, you know, buying their limited cards so they can build their lineups and then wanting to progress in the game. And in order to progress, start selling their limiteds, but like totally disappointed at the prices they were getting. And now instead of a gateway, they were stuck because now like they lost a bunch of money on their gateway drug, the limiteds, and they couldn't even pay for the rare cards anymore. What you're telling me is like that like totally is not happening.
I'm not saying that actually. Okay. I think where where the problem is with the jump is I think there are people who are making profits on their limited cards,
but it's not enough to get to the rares. So they bought cheap limited cards. They were able to turn a profit, but now it's like, I don't have enough to buy the rare cards. So now I have to go buy more better limited cards, but now I'm paying more for it because everybody's paying more for it, but I still don't have enough. So you end up in this weird limbo of, do I put more money in to buy the rare cards, which allow me to progress at some point and win better rewards? Or do I just buy semi overpriced limited cards so that I can win comparable cards to what I own to then sell? But then I don't know, like, I don't think there is as clear a progression from limited cards to rare cards as we think there is.
I think the weird thing that we're seeing right now is, like, one of the reasons to buy super rares and uniques is there's less competition at those levels. There's just fewer lineups entered into those slates or tournaments or whatever you want to call them. But at the very beginning of the limited contests, Division 5 was one of the least, had the least number of entrants at the beginning. And mm-hmm. It's slowly creeping up as people buy these limiteds and acquire them and are able to enter teams. But, there's still tournaments where, you know, half the people are winning cards or more than half the people are winning cards because there's just not enough people that can complete a lineup yet.
Right. I think the slight problem is that so many people in those divisions are winning these cards that they're selling for 0.002 ETH. And I don't know who's buying those also. Like, I think that's the other problem. But, like, I've sold cards like that, and they sell, and I'm sitting there like, why would anyone buy this
card? Why would you want a DNP limited card, tier 3, like, exactly. Guy who has not played in 2 years? What, like, why do you want this guy? He's the third string goalkeeper or whatever.
There are people who are buying, and it's almost like I understand the people who buy all of them more than the people who buy just some of them. Like, right. If you buy, like, all of the 0.001 cards, and you're just like, one of these, one day I'll sell for 0.1, and it all pays. Like, that I get. But the ones that buy thank you to all of those people who are buying these cards from me that I don't want at all. But I think those are going to be the people that, like, get stuck because you're not going to be able to get out of those.
Yeah, you're the host, Andrew, so I'll take your lead. If it fits in to what you can talk about for a moment, I'm curious about what's happening at the other end of the market, the unique end of the market. It's something I never trafficked in and never planned to. Certainly, I can respect the collectability on some of those, especially the very top ones. But I just never saw that as being a market that was worthwhile. Totally illiquid. What's your take on that end?
It was obviously of a relatively illiquid market just based off of supply. Like, there just aren't that many cards. And the demand felt very congested. I don't know what word concentrated, yeah. Maybe in, like, a few people who could afford these cards. Yeah. And it was just this weird thing that there weren't that many people who had, like, 4 or 5 uniques. It was like you either had one or 100 of them.
Right, yeah. Right.
And obviously the number of people who have, or let's just say dozens of them, like, those, the number of those people is just not that big. So if you, like, want to sell a unique, it's like, all right, well, one of these 8 people can afford to buy it and would be interested. But
right.
What we've seen literally in the last week are people, and it came when they announced, when they did the new seasons of PSG. So we got new Messi cards, new Neymars, new Mbappes, where there were super rares selling for $45,000, $55,000, $65,000 to people who had never bought a so rare card before. And so we're at this point where, like, maybe there are people in this level that are going to come in and do it. But, like, ultimately, you're not going to have thousands of people who are going to be able to buy unique cards. And so, like you said, I think you need to be a specialist in illiquid assets to be able to handle that. Because, I mean, the the people who own a ton of uniques don't use them all. Like they like fundamentally cannot use all of their uniques. They're not enough to, you know, contest to enter. And so they're buying these uniques of, like, I guess with the idea that one of them becomes the next Messi or Ronaldo, right, and that pays for the others. But I mean, it's obviously just a humongous financial gamble that is just so far beyond what I can stomach myself even thinking about, that I don't know how they do it.
Yeah. And like when I thought about uniques, I thought about, like, you couldn't even buy five, because you can't count on five cards being like eligible and not injured. And like you almost needed to like set your mind to have 10 or 12 if you wanted to like field one lineup a week in some, yep, you know, division one. And you know, that's a big slug, man.
And the other difficulty is that the good cards usually aren't for sale. Right. Like the people who have these portfolios of uniques don't want to give up the best cards because they help them win more of these, or they're the most expensive ones. And I mean, because the player pool, meaning the so rare manager pool of people who play at that level, if you sell one of yours, you're making it harder for your, not only do you not have that card anymore to play in your lineups, but now you're competing against it because whoever you sold it to, right, is going to play it.
Right.
And so I've just always looked at the unique marketplace as almost like a totally different game, totally, than what everybody else is playing. And right, it's fun to watch, you know, 5 and 6 digit transfer fees, but that's all it is. I'm just watching.
Yeah. I mean, clearly we need more Nigerian princes and, you know, royalty from overseas to join the game.
Yeah. But I think, I mean, people get excited about this whole, like, oh, look, this is somebody who just bought, I forget which card it was. It was either a Messi or Neymar.
The Neymar Super Rare.
The Neymar Super Rare. And yeah, like, that was their first introduction to So Rare, of I'm going to spend whatever it was, $45,000, yeah, on this digital card. I have no idea if they bought another one. But it was just like, oh, this is fun. Somebody else is here. But like, it doesn't change the game for me at all. I'm not selling cards to these people. You know, like I it's, like I said, it's just a different world for me.
Yeah. Look, hey, and there's still like, hey, I mean, I'm bullish on the platform. I mean, there's tens and thousands of great fans that probably still haven't signed up for So Rare. Yeah, there's still like totally room to grow. So, and I think they're doing like a fantastic job, like really not barely misstepping. Again, I thought the supply demand thing, I thought they could maybe do more about that for that week or two, but maybe they couldn't. You know, it's going to be interesting to see. I mean, I will say this, that those round of fundings and stuff, those are great. And that means that there's like some company with deep pockets that believes in the product that does create pressure. And, yep, you know, they're going to have pressure to grow revenue. And right now, the only way they're growing revenue right now for what the product is today is by selling more soccer cards.
Yeah.
And, you know,
on the primary market, not the secondary market.
Well, no, that was going to be my point.
Yeah.
The only way they make money is selling more cards in the primary market, which is a detriment to your galleries.
Yeah.
So like in a macro sense, is a detriment.
No,
to your
100%.
No, it's absolutely right.
Yeah.
So like, you know, it's like at odds. And you know, Andrew Laird, you and I have seen like the evolution of daily fantasy, right, to being like these contests, what it used to be, to going to what we call top heavy contests, where like, you know, first place is $1 million, but fifth place is $50, where it's like, yeah, totally these top heavy prize pools, because they thought, geez, to draw in the users, we have to have that headline number be $1 million prize, even though giving $1 million to first and $50 to fifth, that just, the game can't sustain itself that, no, way, because people don't, yeah, like, people don't win anything. The vast majority of people that are playing don't win. And so I just wonder, you know, so we're like, those guys that run this platform are gonna need to think about issues like that when things maybe stagnate a little bit, or, and it'll just be interesting to see which levers they pull, because there's like a whole community of people watching every lever very closely and then reacting to those levers. And by the way, this is people, remember, and people are stupid. And so people will react like negatively to something that's positive. So right. It's like, might not even be their fault at So Rare headquarters. Just, it's just people's interpretation of actions that can unfurl something.
So the talking about the speed of auctions now, obviously the introduction of the limited cards gave them a significant supply boost that they had to get these cards out. You obviously haven't been to the auctions in a while because it doesn't, you don't need to buy cards. They are giving closing auctions.
Have them guess.
How often do you think these auctions are
closed? I mean, it's like 10, 20 seconds, right?
It's now down to 10 seconds. Every 10 seconds, they're selling a limited card. And the rares are every 3 minutes, which actually is slower than it was previously.
That is slower, yeah.
But they don't need to sell them as much because they're like the demand for the limited cards is so high. But what you were saying about pulling the levers. So when they introduce a new team, we've seen they will bang out like upwards of 65 cards per player on day one, which sounds absurd.
Limiteds.
Limited 65. So on day one, when PSG came out, I think it's around 65. Let's say it is. Like there were 65 messy auctions for limited cards on day one. So that's the problem, obviously, for the secondary market when you're like, if you bought, card number 11 and you're like, I'm going to flip this quickly. And it's like, well, you're going to try to flip this quickly, but there are 50 more auctions that are about to happen. So like, you're kind of stuck. And so we saw I think the first ones, meaning once the one of a thousands came down, they were settling around like up until 10, it was like around 0.7 ETH. And then, it was just progressively lower. I think 0.52 was the lowest that we saw. But the problem, so I remember, I forget which card it was, but one of the early ones, it was bought for 0.711 and then put on the market for 0.720. And it was like, you're not going to sell this card because the auction's already down to 0.55 and there are 30 more auctions to go. What happened later though, is that once the 65, the day one were done, now they start doing like two or three a day and now they're creeping back up. And so that 0.72 is going to sell. But the problem is you're like, great, I sold a Messi at 0.72, but you paid 0.711 for it. Right. And there are other people who paid 0.5, but like, we just know, like, I think people underestimate just how many cards 1,000 is, but we're seeing it so quickly with prices going from, I mean, the first one was like 3 ETH, but like we've seen that the serial one is always going to be way higher.
Right.
But like literally we're seeing it like 0.52 and let me see if I can pull this up, but like the messy cards are now like coming back up because
they're back up to like the last four are 0.786, 0.715, 0.68, 0.68.
And there were some people who got like the 0.5, like the number 0.52 is just like so stuck in my head because I can't believe somebody got it like for, as I'm thinking, like that cheap. But what was the serial number of those last ones though?
59, 58, 57, 56.
So we have 940 and change left, and yet these things are still like flying up. But like the limited card market is so strange.
I mean, part of the reason for that is there's literally only one more on auction right now. Number 60 is on auction. It's already up to 0.655, and it ends in 8 hours.
I'm fascinated by like the math. And they're very deliberate in what they're doing, but let's also not kid ourselves. Like they can't predict what's going to happen. They can do all the math and have an economist on hand and do all this crap. Like they don't know what's going to happen either. And so they can go with a hypothesis, but like, this is a complex, I mean, I've said it before. I've said it on this podcast. So Rare is a really complex ecosystem and marketplace. It's fascinating. And I can't wait to see what happens with it.
I think it's kind of unprecedented. We've never had or seen anything like it.
Totally.
I haven't, at least.
Totally.
Evaldo, so there was an auction that closed a few minutes ago that I had here on my computer, and I'm curious what you think the price would be. So Martin van de Voort is obviously the Genk goalkeeper. He's 19. He's, I believe, the most expensive U23 goalkeeper.
Yeah.
How much do you think his limited card sold for in dollars? Now, this is the new scarcity. It's supposed to, you know, be cheaper to let us get it in.
I mean, if the limited card is selling anything over for him, and I know him, he's special. I mean, is it over $500 or $600?
$988.
Sucker. No, I'm just kidding.
Love it.
I mean, this is the cheap way to play. And obviously this is an elite card. But
yeah, I get it. I don't know. Hell's bells.
Have you had any thoughts of I should have not sold when I did?
Zero. Literally zero. Not because I'm like overconfident in myself. I really didn't think that. I was thinking consciously that like I really liked, and this is not rear view mirror stuff because I'm sitting here today. I really liked the thought of getting out of ETH when it was like 36, 37. Like that just felt frothy to me. To me, it did. To some people, it doesn't. And so that was like really comfortable for me, and I was happy with that. So
I just sold another card, by the way.
Congratulations.
What was their name?
It's easier to sell more.
I should sell more? Oh.
No, once you do sell and get over that barrier, it gets easier to keep selling. I think.
There are a lot of cards that I probably should have sold. I mean, there are definitely cards I should have sold, but I find cards that I use significantly harder to sell, even at egregious prices. Like there are people who come to me and they're like, what would you like for this card? And I get, maybe I just am not comfortable giving an egregious price, even because I actually wonder if I should, like, if that's a good deal or not.
Right.
I don't know how I'm explaining this.
I hear you.
But
you don't want to offend anyone. That's what it sounds like.
No. Well, I'm okay offending people if they come to me and say, how much do you want for this card?
Gotcha.
And if I'm not selling it and I'm just like,
10,
you know, like that's what it's going to take to get me. What gets me are the people who are like, yeah, but the lowest on the market is. And I'm like, mine's not on the market.
Right.
I'm not trying to sell my card. Right. You're trying to buy my card. This is a very different situation here.
Yeah.
Well, I love the ones like, hey, mate, I want your, you know, Harold Macoute. And I'm just like, hey, mate, I want a date with Jennifer Aniston. Yeah, I was like, kind of play those games. And, you know,
it really shows your age there, Evaldo.
I know. I said that I did that one on purpose to show that.
So do you think you're going to be tempted to come back at all?
You know, it's a long winter, you know, and like, hey, you're inside, not as much to do. Steel City, the team that I'm, you know, we're in the off season. Like, totally, maybe. It may happen. I mean, I enjoy popping into the Discord and hearing you guys talk about the game. Now, that probably makes me a loser because I'm not playing the game, but I'm listening to people playing the game, which that's pretty bad, I guess.
This feels like people who watch esports, though. I think you're actually talking to, you know, you're talking to us. So you're just, right, I don't know what this is actually called, but I.
Voyeurism is what it's called.
Love it.
Fair enough. So if anybody came to you and said, should I play So Rare? What do you tell them?
Oh, totally. And I tell them like to stick with it. Cause I, you know, it is hard at first. And I, from what I gather, they've made the onboarding easier. Obviously I only onboarded when I did back in December. you know, it's a little tough there at the beginning, and you just got to stick with it. Love the game. I think it's fantastic.
Yeah, I think the hardest part probably when you started was it was pretty much MLS in Belgium and really expensive players, other players in Europe. Like, that was it.
Yeah. For me, it was like the amount of days it took to get like ETH from like getting money from your bank to your wallet to, so like there was like a 3 or 4, sometimes a six or seven day window that you're just like handcuffed and you're just like, oh, I want to play. And then you're like, your credit card gets, then you start doing it on your credit card and you get like fraud warnings twice a day. And like, it's just like, it was hard.
So did you buy ETH and then moved it to the site? Did you make any purchases with your credit card?
You know, I did one or two at the very, very beginning.
Okay.
Like one or two cards with credit card.
Gotcha. Cause I think that is probably the easiest way. But then again, I know that there's issues with that too, where, you know, every time you bid is not a transaction, but it's like it shows up on your, I don't know.
You get charged.
Yeah.
Yeah, it just was unreliable because it would go through sometimes and sometimes not go through based on a fraud thing. And like, that doesn't work when you're like in an auction with 10 seconds left, right?
Right, right.
So that's what the hard part was.
Interesting.
The phone call to your credit card company telling them what you're doing is always fun. I'm buying digital soccer cards. And they're like, what? Are you sure? You sure you want to do that?
Right.
Evaldo, have you followed the NFT market at all as a whole?
You know, just what like is like on my Twitter stream, you know, with all these like influencers that are out there.
Like cat pictures and bored apes.
Yeah. So like I'm familiar, but I haven't like, oh, hey, I'm going to go research that and the origin of it and how many there are and whether I'm going to go research whether I think that's a good investment. I've done that to zero of the projects. What about you?
I don't know. I follow it. I not heavy research into any of them. And I know that there's, I know a lot of the projects, my opinion, I think that there's a lot of funny business going on in a lot of those, markets where, you know, there's manipulation occurring and wash trading and right, fake sales to make it look like your thing's worth more than it actually is. But then again, I also don't have like data to support my theories and thoughts, but it's just kind of like a outsider looking in. And that's kind of what I see. I mean, a JPEG of a ape is worth what? Like, are you kidding me?
Right. I have the same view as you. The only thing that that really caused me pause though for a moment that I was like, was when, I don't know if it was Citibank or Visa or some credit card company or some bank bought a CryptoPunk as part of like their advertising campaign.
Visa did.
As part of an unadvertising campaign that they had. And I thought, oh geez, well that's, someone could look back on that as a watershed moment for that particular NFT.
Yeah.
So that was surprising to me.
Someone, a big company did the same with the Bored Apes. They bought, I forget who it was, but it was, I don't know, household name. They bought one and they were using it as part of a marketing campaign as well.
Yeah. So that you're like, oh, okay.
So Evaldo, you're not entering the DraftKings contest that award Bored Apes or CryptoPunks?
I am not. Do they have those? I know they have their own NFTs, but I didn't know they tethered themselves to apes and CryptoPunks.
Yeah, they have some sporadic ones. I think there was a golf one the other day.
No kidding. Yeah. Good for them. I mean, look, the guys at DraftKings are like, they're really, really talented. They're really good visionaries. And so I wouldn't bet against them finding good marriages of all these new technologies and asset classes. And, you know, their tech is obviously great. I think DraftKings tech is great. So I wouldn't bet against them having something that's really good.
Yeah. You have any other questions, Andy?
I don't.
I went through my list.
I think we're just sad that you left us. You abandoned us.
The only positive is that we don't have to compete with him anymore.
Oh, yeah. Bullocks. You guys are experts. You guys are experts. You guys are great. I'll be watching.
Yeah, scouring Twitter for DNP news. Yeah. Just totally nerding out over here.
You guys are fantastic. Oh, well.
All right. I guess that brings us to the end of the Sober Andrews podcast this week. Ivaldo, thank you so much for coming on. I think that wasn't nearly as doom and gloom as I was actually hoping for. I thought
you were hoping for it to be more doom and gloom.
I think I was expecting the podcast to end and for me to be like, I might have to just leave also.
And, hey, before Ivaldo leaves, let him plug Steel City. You know, like sing their fight song.
Tell us something more about Steel City, where we can get season tickets. That's right.
Yeah, well, you know, it's this like team that plays in this minor league baseball stadium near my house. And like as small as, I mean, we get like 100 people a game if we're lucky. But as small as it is, we're literally, and you can follow us on Twitter at Steel City FC. We're literally the first club in American soccer history to get an amnesty payment from an American soccer club. So Chicago House, which is a third division team in NISA, paid us for signing one of our players. And that has never happened. I mean, and like Peter Wilt has validated that. I mean, has it happened in the 1800s? I mean, obviously we don't know that, but like even Peter was like, there's no record of this ever happening. So we were like, we chuckled at that and we were pretty proud of that.
When is the season?
It runs from April to like the end of August. It's a very summer season. Not a lot of youth soccer is in the way. Not a lot's in the way, which is how we like it.
Is it mostly players that are done with college and they're looking for somewhere else to play? Is that pretty much what you got going on?
Yeah, so both. So and we pride ourselves on like kind of our shtick is it's all local players from like a pretty small area. And so our players are like, a lot of them go to the local colleges around here and play in college. There's some that are like the varsity coaches of the local high school teams. Some teams in our league, it's a 20 team league, the Midwest Premier League. Some teams pay some players. We're just not there yet. Although we did finish third in the table, which we were proud of for our first year and not paying any of the players.
Wow.
And so like, it's a little bit of a hodgepodge.
Yeah, that's cool.
But it's not like, these aren't like 35 year old. I mean, these are fit for the most part, you know, in their 20s and still playing at like a decent level. And
yep.
We played Chicago House in a friendly, which is, you know, a real third division team. You know, we lost to them 2-0 in a 90 minute game. So we were like relatively competitive.
Have you guys played any teams from St. Louis out of curiosity?
No, the farthest south is Diablos FC, which is in Bloomington, Illinois. Wow. That's the farthest south team in the 20-team Midwest Premier League.
Okay.
But, you know, St. Louis is a hotbed. I'm in touch pretty often with the guys in the league, and I'm volunteering to help them as well expand the league. Like, we really want to get down into like Southern Illinois and kind of get down kind of in there. There's a really good team called Springfield FC in Springfield, Illinois.
Okay.
That would kind of be like a peer club that would kind of fit into like our model. But in these kind of leagues, you need teams within a drivable small footprint. Cause none of these types of teams is going to like get on an airplane.
Right.
None of these guys want to drive, you know, 7 hours to go play
Makes
a
sense.
Road game. So that's the important thing with things like this. And that's why we've been successful, because this 20 team league is pretty compact amongst three states.
Have you been in touch with So Rare about Steel City FC cards?
No, but good idea.
I mean, they said they want the top 20 leagues in the world. So I think it's worth seeing the Midwest Premier League up there.
There are 180 teams now, I think I saw, which is incredible. Incredible. Love it.
Yeah.
Love it. Now, One last question. They have a tagline, new teams every week. Do they really live up to that? Like, those words are like on their site, I think.
I think it's an average.
Okay.
Like they added most of La Liga. I mean, they added the rest of La Liga. So that gives them, you know, a 12-week gap. And
yeah, gotcha.
But then they also like, My guess is most weeks they're adding teams. Like, they added some Peruvian team the other day, and it's like, okay, I don't know. I was not interested in that at all, but
they're a team from Peru?
Yeah.
Now,
like a mid-table team, too.
I know we want to wrap up. I mean, you get too many of those stray cats and dogs in there that, like, that the average fan just doesn't care about at all. There's a potential that gets a little frustrating. Because, you know, someone's podiuming because they're an expert at the Peruvian League, which, like, you don't feel like going in and being an expert at.
I think there already has been where some of those players will, like, creep up into the reward pools, and somebody will do really well and they'll win a card from, like, a obscure team or league or something. And certainly there's frustration there when you win the goalkeeper of this Peru team and he's listed as a tier one or a star because he's a goalkeeper. And you're like, oh, I have a Peruvian goalkeeper now. What do I do?
Right. And, you know, information might not be as easy on whether he's playing or not playing. Yeah. That could be a little dicey, actually. So, anyway, sorry. I didn't mean to bring up, like, a whole other topic.
We'll have to have you back for a different downer podcast talking about Peruvian football.
Well, I'm not happy that I disappointed, and I'm going to have to, like, drink some more aggression before the next one.
Nice.
Yeah, you need to buy back in and then sell back out, and then we can talk about right. that too.
I'll try to think of what that ripple event is going to be. But if I can think of it, if you can dream it, it actually won't be the thing that causes the ripple.
Right, right. Can't be an unseen circumstance if we saw it. So
right.
All right. Once again, this has been the So Rare Andrews podcast, brought to you by RotoWire and sponsored by So Rare. We will be back next week with another topic. If you have something you'd like us to discuss, feel free to reach out to us. Probably the easiest through the So Rare Discord. I am at Lairdino. Andy is there at Black. Evaldo may be creeping around there, but you can always send him questions. Just good luck and find him. But yeah, Evaldo, thank you for that. Andy, I'll talk to you next week.
See you guys.
See ya.
Thank you for listening to the RotoWire Fantasy Soccer Podcast. For more great content, visit rotowire.com/soccer.